time for the only Wicked Good podcast in out there, period. Any subject, stick to wrestling. My name is John McAdam, and if you give us 60 minutes, we will give you a breathtaking broadcast right here every week. I am here with my co-host, Sean Goodwin. Sean, how are you today?
Outstanding, John. How are you?
I'm doing really well, thank you. And one reason is because we have an awesome Facebook group. Just go to Stick to Wrestling on Facebook. It is easy enough to find. We would love to have you guys join in the conversation. And if you like this podcast, you'll like that group as well. You can follow me on Twitter. It's, you know, go find John McAdam with the crazy wrestling picture. I don't talk much on Twitter, but I'm actually trying to make an effort to put more out there. And with Valentine's Day not far away from when this is being recorded or released, we are going to talk about Greg Valentine today, and we're going to do so with our guest, Mike Gunter, who grew up in the Carolinas, as you might know. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great, John. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thank you for coming on, man. It's good to talk to you.
Absolutely.
All right. And Mike, as we know, grew up in the Carolinas, where Greg Valentine did most of his damage before Greg showed up in the Carolinas. He did some wrestling in he was Johnny Fargo for a while.
Johnny Fargo. Yep.
Well, he started as Babyface Nelson was his first name, I think.
I did not know that. Babyface,
yes.
Nelson.
Yes. And that was before he became Johnny Fargo.
Oh, man. So he was part of the Fabulous Fargos for a while, and then he became Greg Valentine, and he was billed as Johnny's younger brother, which is, well, I mean, it's not accurate. He's Johnny's son, and the reason they did that was because Johnny did not want to be portrayed as someone who was so old that he had a son.
Exactly.
Old enough to be in the wrestling business.
Exactly.
Do you guys think that would have hurt Johnny?
It wouldn't have helped. Yeah, you know, probably. It was just something you didn't think about. So, you know, don't go there.
I agree with John. I think it was a really good idea to do it that way. I mean, I don't know what it would have been like had they been like, you know, here's my son, Johnny Valentine. Maybe it would have worked. But anytime I look at Bob and Brad Armstrong in the 80s, I mean, to me, it made Bob look old.
Yep,
to have a
absolutely.
Son old enough to be a wrestler. And then Brad kind of came across as a guy who hung around with his dad too much.
Yep.
I mean, if I'm being a little frank there, excuse me, but, you know, that's what it looked like. It looked like,
sure.
You know, I think Brad needed to get away from Bob, and he never really could.
No, he was a Southern boy, and he stayed in the South.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, poor Brad, now he's in his mid-30s working Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and he's still in his dad's shadow. But anyway, and then Greg Valentine wound up going to Florida. It looked like that was his first real major push outside of Los Angeles. He got a big push there. But his first real major push, he had Sir Oliver Humperdinck as his manager, who also managed the Hollywood Blondes. And he was in main events in Florida. This is like 76. Do either of you guys have any memories or observations of that?
Not really. I was in college during that time, and I didn't watch as much Florida then as I did before, after I was in college. But I do remember when he came into Mid-Atlantic in like August of 76 or so.
Now, Mike, please tell us about this story, because I've read about this.
Well, he came in and he started feuding with Johnny Weaver, and he did an elbow drop off the top rope and retired Johnny Weaver. Is that the story you're talking about?
Yes.
When they said it was a deadly maneuver, and he showed him breaking boards with his elbow on TV.
Oh, wow.
They showed that. Yeah.
I never heard that before.
Well, they showed some tapes of it, on TV to show how deadly he was with his elbow.
Now, you're in the Carolinas. Obviously, you're not watching as much as you had been because you were in college, but you were at least seems like you were keeping in touch with it.
Right. Right.
What was the reaction that Johnny Valentine's little brother is here? What was the reaction he initially got?
Did they say he was his brother then? I thought when he came in to the Carolinas, they said he was his son. I could be wrong.
I can't say because I wasn't there, but I do know that in the magazines, they always referred to Greg as Johnny's younger brother.
Well, I know they did before then down in Florida and all. They said it was his brother, but I can't remember if they said that or not in the Carolinas. Maybe they did, but I know that he and Flair started teaming up in the spring of 77, and they won the NWA World Title and then the Mid-Atlantic titles several times during that period. They first won the NWA titles from Gene and Ole like at the end of 76. So.
Okay.
They would have brought Greg in after the plane crash, right?
Yeah, a year after.
So because Lou just kind of mentioned here that Greg was built as Johnny's brother in Houston and St. Louis, but right. When he comes to North Carolina after the accident, at that point it doesn't really matter, you know.
Right.
So you might as well tell him the truth.
Right.
Okay, so that makes sense. When did he come in? Was it 75, 76?
75 then. He came in August of 76.
And when did he start teaming with Rick? Well, what a great team.
Well, they beat Ole and Gene in December 26 of 76. So.
And they injured Gene, right?
Yes.
Now, what led to Ric Flair and the Andersons splitting up? They never covered that in the magazines.
I don't know. I don't remember, John. I think it's probably had to do with, Flair starting to get real popular and they started, resenting that and turned on him some.
Okay. Because I do know that at some point the Andersons were, I don't even know if they were tweeners. They were flat out baby faces.
Faces.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I remember that interview Ole did, which I've seen on the old Mid-Atlantic tapes, where Ole is in the hospital with Gene. Gene is not unconscious in a hospital bed, and Ole's doing the wrestling interview, and it was over something Flair and Valentine put Gene there.
Right.
Did you ever see those four live?
I saw them live tons of times, but not against each other.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. What about the Greg, one of my favorite angles, the probably my favorite Greg moment, the Greg breaks Wahoo's leg.
Right.
Now, were you able to see that match on television?
Yes, they showed it on TV. It actually happened here in Raleigh, but I did not go to it because I was living in Charlotte at that time. So.
Okay. Do you remember anything about what led up to it?
Well, what happened was Wahoo had cost – I think he was a special referee against Gene and Ole, and when Gene and Ole wrestled Flair and Valentine and cost him the championship. He was a special referee, and it was a steel cage match, and so he cost him the tag team title, so Valentine was pissed off about it. So when they wrestled, he broke Wahoo's leg.
And also, Sweet Lou chiming in, it was a studio match for the Mid-Atlantic title.
Right.
As well. And the figure four kind of, it really wasn't, it was a, what did David call it? A European figure four. Because Greg couldn't actually get it on him. So it basically turned into Greg kind of pulling his legs together and just falling backwards.
Yeah, it said Wahoo's legs were too thick or something for him to get it on right.
Oh my God.
What was the reaction when he came out with the shirt? Did you own a shirt? Do you have one?
No, I didn't. But it.
Oh.
The one that I broke Wahoo's leg.
Yeah, two things. I mean, here we have, we had the legendary Wahoo McDaniel versus Johnny Valentine feud.
Right.
And now we're bringing in Greg Valentine, and Greg almost kind of immediately gets into it with Wahoo, and he breaks the guy's leg.
Right.
I mean, what kind of reaction did that get?
Oh, it got a lot of reaction. He got a lot of heat for doing that, for sure.
I mean, it's Wahoo in the Carolinas. The guy is a legend's legend.
Right, for sure.
Now, this clip, I believe, is out there. And you can hear the air getting sucked out of the room when this happens. Because this is the baddest man on the planet, Wahoo McDaniel, getting stretchered out.
Right.
That's putting somebody over for a little favor to the old man, I'm assuming.
For sure. And Wahoo was, you know, he was gone for like 2 months, you know, with a broken leg, and then he came back and he beat Valentine for the Mid-Atlantic Championship when he came back.
Wahoo was always very good at setting that up.
For sure.
A little bit more about the t-shirt. I mean, when I saw that, I thought that was just so outrageous. The guy breaks Wahoo McDaniel's leg, and then he gets a t-shirt custom made to brag about it. On the back,
it said, "No more Wahoo."
That's right.
Now, what was that? That's more interesting to me, because that was a dare. I've seen people get legs broken before. That happens, you know, in wrestling. This I haven't seen before. Because they also ran this same angle in, as John will remember, in the WWF, except with Chief J. And I actually made me a fan of Greg for a while. But Wahoo was a little more popular in that area. What was the fan react? Because Wahoo was he was a giant.
Oh, it really enraged the crowd and got Greg a ton of heat.
Were there any riots over this? I mean, I can only imagine, because Greg's been in a few of these kind of just ultra hot angles.
I don't think there was any riots about it, but it got a ton of heat for sure.
Now, what was the feud like? Did they do like two or three matches per arena around the horn? Did they have like a big – I'm guessing they had a strap match to blow it off, sure. But I don't know.
Well, you know, Wahoo, like I said, won the title back from when he came back from the broken leg. But then a month later, Valentine beat him again for it. And then he held it for like 6 or 7 months. The Mid-Atlantic Championship before he lost it to Ken Patera.
Right. And this was back when the Mid-Atlantic title was a big deal.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, in the 80s, it kind of petered out. And, you know, when you have Rufus R. Jones and Sam Houston holding it. But then it was a very important title.
Well, look at it this way, because you really didn't the world title wasn't a week in, week out belt back then. So your main title would have been the U.S. title. Main singles title would have been the U.S. title. And the main secondary title. So it would be the equivalent of the U.S. title in the 80s.
Probably so, yeah. You're right.
Yeah. In the way the fans looked. And another feud of mine, feud of Greg's I love is, I'm a big fan, is Piper.
Right. Well, we'll get to that. Let me tell you a story
about
it.
Way down the road.
Yeah. Valentine left the Mid-Atlantic in like 78 and worked for Vince Sr. 78 and 79.
Very memorable.
Yep, for sure. And that's when he broke Chief J's leg, and he even wrestled Bob Backlund, I think, to like a 1 hour draw or something in the Garden.
He was a champion for like 10 minutes.
No, that was 81 though.
Okay.
We're in like 78, 79. I remember in 78 that, you know, WWF wrestling would come on 11 o'clock on Channel 56. And every, I don't know, 3-4 weeks, we would have someone new in the territory, whether it be a babyface or a heel. And Vince McMahon would always say, and making his debut here on Championship Wrestling, and just the anticipation inside of me would swell up. I'd be like, okay, who? And sometimes it would be a massive disappointment. We will be seeing for the first time Carlos Rocha. I'm like, yuck. But when he said Greg Valentine, I was in a state of euphoria. I had seen him in the magazines. To me, he was a top 10 in my mind. He was a top, maybe not a top 10 star, but certainly a top 20 star in the game. And I knew what it meant. He was going around the horn against Backlund.
Right.
Did they reference Johnny when Greg went to New York? Because Johnny Valentine was a big star.
They did mention that. They didn't make a big deal about it. It probably came up once or twice during Valentine's first two runs in the WWF that he was, they said he was Johnny Valentine's son. Again, maybe, definitely once, maybe twice, but I'm not sure.
Okay, I actually met Greg Valentine during the time he was in the WWF the first time.
Oh, like you got to tell us about this.
Okay, I graduated from college in 77, and I moved to Charlotte, and I was selling, worked for 5 years in a retail selling stereo and video equipment down there. And one Saturday, I was managing a store then, and it was kind of busy, and I look up, Greg Valentine walks in, and I go up and I say, ask him if I can help him, and he's looking for a cabinet to put his stereos in, and we got talking. I said, you haven't been wrestling here for a while. Where are you wrestling? He said, well, I'm wrestling up in the WWF, but I'm still have my house here and all that. So we got to talk about, and he picks out a cabinet. Obviously he picks out the most expensive one we have. And, so I said, okay, let me, I'll go grab one out of the back. I'll go grab the one in the box in the back and roll it out to your car. And he says, what do you mean get one in the box? I said, well, they come unassembled. You have to put them together. He said, I'm not putting no damn cabinet together. I said, well, then you'll have to take the one off the floor, and it's, I'll have to, you know, get somebody to do that. This was after he'd already paid for it and all. It's like $400, which is back in 79 was pretty a lot of money. And
oh, yeah.
He reaches in his pants pocket, pulls out his, a wad of cash, and he pulls off $100 bills, and he puts it in my shirt pocket, and he says, here, I'll take the one off the floor, and you can pay somebody to, put it together.
Nice.
So I get it, and I get a hand truck, and I roll it out to his car. He pulls his Cadillac up to the curb in front of his little mini mall with maybe 20 stores in it, and he pulls it up and pops the trunk, and we go to pick it, and I look, and there's got to be at least 50 pair of silk boxer shorts in his trunk. Now, why in the world anybody would have that many pair of silk boxer shorts in their trunk and a box full of, you know, 8x10 pictures? I said, what in the world? Anyway, we get it in there. And he goes to shut the truck, and he says, hold on a second. And he starts looking through that box of pictures. He pulls one out. He grabs the pen out of my shirt pocket, and he autographs it to me and hands me the picture. And he shuts his trunk, and he drives off.
I hope you still have that picture, do you?
I do somewhere, yeah.
Excellent.
For sure.
That's not very heelish behavior.
No. But he was I think he was surprised that somebody recognized him for one.
Yeah.
But,
that's a cool story.
Yeah, it's like, that's like early 79 before he came back. And he came back at the end of 79.
Yeah, he had his big run, his big first run in the WWF, went around the horn against Backlund. And yes, he did 1 hour draws against Bob. I know he did one in Madison Square Garden. I know he did one in Boston Garden. And then the buildup for the rematch was that it was going to be a 90-minute time limit, which had never been done out here before, as far as I know. And in the rematch, Bob got the Duke, as Vince McMahon would say. And Greg hung around for a little while. It looked like he was going to have that typical just heel run. And then we have the match on television against Chief J. Strongbow. Now, Strongbow had been back for 3 years at this point, and he was stale. There was no question about it. It was probably – they probably would have been better off having Strongbow, you know, just leave the territory and save this angle for someone else, but they didn't. They just announced we have a main event next week, Greg Valentine against Chief J. Strongbow, and I kind of remember thinking to myself, you know, well, last time a gentleman of Native American heritage got into it with Greg. He wound up with a broken leg. And what do you know? They did the match. Strongbow and Valentine collide in the middle of the ring. They're both out. Grand Wizard, I'm surprised they never did. I never saw this angle again because I thought it was great. Picks up a pitcher of water that's at ringside, douses Greg Valentine with it to wake him up. And Valentine, for no apparent reason, applies the figure four leg lock to Strongbow and leaves it on. The ref's trying to get him off, and he won't get off, and he breaks Strongbow's leg. And I remember, you know, the next Monday in school, everyone – we didn't talk about wrestling in school until this came up. Holy cow, Chief J. Strongbow has a broken leg.
Now, wasn't Chief J – wasn't he kind of – out for most of this thing when it kind of made it look even worse?
They kept him on a stretcher at ringside for about three more matches. And at one point, the Lou Albano and the Valiant brothers are taunting him. It was nothing short of hilarious. But then the ambulance finally arrives. I guess there was traffic in Allentown, and they got him out of there.
Whose idea was it to actually – because it was actually kind of rare for them to just blatantly steal a famous angle like this. You know, they always like to keep separation from them and everybody else, you know, the riffraff, I guess, as they would look at it.
Yeah, and especially considering, you know, the similarities between Wahoo McDaniel and Chief J Strongbow. I mean, you know, had they done it with Ivan Putski or someone like that, I would have been like, wow, that's very similar to what someone else did.
So whose idea was it to bring it to the WWF? You're all hooked up in that area.
I'm assuming he just came in the normal way that guys would come in, and Vince McMahon would, or Vince Sr. would be on the phone with different promoters and asking for recommendations. And I'm sure Crockett gave him a recommendation for Valentine for a 9 or 10 month run, which is what it turned out to be.
No. I just meant as far as using that particular angle on Chief J. The same one they used in the Carolinas. They usually did not bring angles in like that. They like to, you know, show how they're different from everybody else.
Yeah, pure speculation. I bet Greg made the recommendation, you know, hey, you've got my figure four leg lock over. Let's do it so that we can, you know, do a leg breaking angle with it. And they did the thing where Valentine, you know, would get on TV and for four or five weeks and talk about how he ended Chief J Strongbow's career. You'll never see him again. And Valentine is wrestling one day and comes out on crutches with Chief J Strongbow and takes a ringside seat, and Valentine acts like he has seen a ghost.
I bet.
If I'm sitting there pitching this to Vince, all I do is reach into my bag and pull out the picture of him with the him grinning, that famous picture. Him grinning with the two thumbs up and the I Broke Wahoo's Legs t-shirt on. And that's all you have to do. And be like, yeah, we have to do this. Yep, absolutely. I love that picture. That is one of the great heel pictures of all time. He was so smug.
And, of course, it's the WWF. They take Valentine and Strongbow around the horn. The first match is a double disqualification. The second match is the Indian strap match. And, of course, there's no finish in the Indian strap match. They all went double DQs around the horn. And right around then was the last we saw of Chief J Strongbow. Valentine had a big main event against Bruno Sammartino. Not a main event, a semi-main event against Bruno Sammartino in Madison Square Garden, which was a big deal. And then Greg finally heads back to the Carolinas. Right. And, Mike, the landscape has changed since Greg has left.
Flair's a face then when he came back.
His best friend Ric Flair is in the other dressing room hanging out with Greg's old enemies. Now, were you watching or at least watching closely at this point?
Absolutely.
Good.
And Flair asked him Valentine asked Flair to be his partner again, and Flair turned him down.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And so he teamed up with Ray Stevens then.
Okay, I remember that, the Valentine Stevens team. So Greg is still a heel. Flair is a babyface. And what's the relationship between the two? Like, kind of, okay, you know, even though we're in different dressing rooms, we're just going to keep distance, sort of thing?
Yeah, for the time being, it was.
And, point of clarification for Mike. When they asked to be a tag team partners, was this over? Was there a tag team tournament coming up or something like that?
I don't think so. I just think he wanted him to be his partner again. So
okay. For some reason, I remember something involving some kind of – okay, I may be thinking of another year, but I was thinking something involving a tag team tournament that they got spurned about.
No, I don't remember anything from that particular time frame.
Okay.
But at some point, Ric Flair accepts Greg's offer to be his tag team partner, might have even asked him to be his tag team partner. Mike, what happened here?
Well, after Valentine and Stevens won the NWA titles, but then they got them taken away from them. And then a little while later, Valentine saw the light, you know, supposedly, and he and Flair became a babyface tag team. And they wrestled for a while together, you know, not that long, but then Flair and Valentine were fighting Snuka and the Iron Sheik in a match, and Valentine just walked off and left Flair by himself, and Flair took Gene Anderson's cane because he was their manager, and, you know, he was Snuka and the Sheik's manager. He took the cane and broke Flair's nose with it.
And now, so, Flair says he got his nose broken legit.
Yeah, he probably did.
Okay. And because, I mean, either they did a really good makeup job on Flair after the angle occurred, or as Flair claims, Valentine. And this, I don't know if this is available on YouTube or not. I have seen it. It is brutal. Valentine, I think he tried 3 times to break that cane and it didn't break. And it's like, bam, didn't break. Bam, didn't break. Bam, finally breaks.
Right.
And it was rough looking. And the crowd was going absolutely crazy when it became apparent that Greg Valentine was turning on Flair.
By the way, what is harder to watch? Greg Valentine tried to be a face, or Ole Anderson tried to be a face? Yeah, people just mean to be a heel.
I don't think Ole was as bad a heel.
No,
because he came across kind of as an everyman. Valentine, I'll tell you, right before – we're getting ahead and I don't mean to. Right before he went to the WWF in 84, they had turned him babyface. And I'm telling – I don't think the prospects looked very good.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so Valentine then – wins the United States title, which had been longstanding, the belt that we were used to seeing Ric Flair
right.
wearing. Did he win it directly from Flair?
Yes, he did, in like July.
Okay. All right, so July 1980.
Right.
Okay. And Mike, any thoughts on like Greg Valentine being the United States champion? And let me explain what I mean by that. Whenever I saw the Ric Flair, Greg Valentine team, I always looked at it as kind of Ric Flair was Batman, Greg Valentine was Robin. He was kind of the little brother of the team.
Right.
And now he's the United States champion feuding with Flair. I mean, what were your thoughts on Valentine finally getting his moment in the sun and being that number one guy?
Well, I was, even then I was a big Flair mark. And to me, Flair, it was Flair's belt and he had to fight to get it back. And it took him for, 5 or 6 months to like the end of November to get it back from Valentine. So, Valentine did a decent job of, keeping it for that length of time, I thought.
I mean, I personally thought that he was, I thought it at the time, and I definitely think it now, especially after his run in the WWF, which was incredibly successful. Like his feet definitely fit those shoes. He was a big enough heel to hold that very prestigious championship.
Right. And then after Flair won the world title, Valentine won the US championship a couple more times. I think he beat Wahoo once, and then he beat Piper for it too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so do you remember, now we're looking at beginning of 81, into, let's say, beginning to middle of 1981. Was this when Valentine, who was he teaming with?
Oh gosh, I don't even remember.
Or what was he doing like the first part of 81?
I don't know, because he didn't feud with Wahoo again until 82, so I'm just trying to think about who he was feuding with in 81. He went to the WWF for a short time in 81 and 82.
He did. I'm just trying to bridge that gap between, like, he showed up again like end of the summer of 1981.
Right.
It was like July or August, summer of 81. But I'm just trying to figure, like, get your perspective of what it was like having him as the former United States champion now, and maybe his push isn't what it once was.
Right. I can't for the life of me remember who he feuded with then.
Now, you know what? Neither can I, and I should have looked it up. I for some reason, I thought he was in a tag team, but I can't remember with who. Baron Von Raschke was before that. Ray Stevens was before that. I'm getting old and losing my memory.
Yeah, me
so
too.
Now, So now it's summer of 1981, and he's back in the WWF. He's got the Grand Wizard as his manager. I know I've told this part of the story on this show before. As soon as I saw Greg Valentine, I thought he was going to win the WWF title from Bob Backlund. Not might.
Right.
Was going to. And I've said this before, but my reasoning was that that Bruno held the title 3 years before that. He had held it for 3 years. Pedro Morales had held it for about 3 years, and now it was Backlund's time. But and obviously that didn't happen, but if I have shared this story on this podcast before, I apologize. But if you haven't heard it, back in, I want to say, 99, 2000, I became like online email friends with a guy who used to wrestle for the WWF in their prelims. He was there for like 5 or 6 years. He was there for a while, and during this time as well. And he told me that there was a plan in place. They were going to put the WWF title on Greg Valentine. That was the plan. And I was taken aback by this. And I was like, what happened? And he said he didn't know. He said that maybe Valentine, Ric Flair had just won the NWA title, and that maybe Valentine was too similar to Flair. Or maybe they just changed their mind because the WWF was doing really good business and Vince McMahon Jr. was about to take over. As time has gone on, I don't think that story was true because, right. Again, WWF was doing too good, and that was basically it. And plus, Valentine has never mentioned it during any of his shoot interviews. Like, I think it would have come out that, he would have said something about it.
Yeah, you would have thought so, for sure.
So Lou and I just were running back quick to find out what was going on in 1981. Greg mostly had tag matches with Piper as his partner, and he also feuded with Sweet Ebony Diamond for the NWA TV title, who was Rocky Johnson.
Right.
And you also tagged a few times with Jimmy Valiant when he was King James. Back in the
All right,
days.
Thank you very much, Lou. Really appreciate it. And that's right. That moving backward a little bit, that's right. They kind of used Valentine. This is Piper's first real big push in a major promotion. When he first got to Mid-Atlantic at the end of 1980, he had come in from Portland. And going from Portland to Mid-Atlantic is a pretty big jump. And by establishing Piper, by kind of having Valentine next to Piper, that makes Piper a way bigger star. So I'm going to give Greg some credit for Piper getting over.
Right. Makes sense. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So anyway, Valentine has that crazy match at Madison Square Garden Valentine against Backlund at Madison Square Garden, where they do that completely goofy finish. It was goofy back then, and it didn't age well.
Where the referee handed him the belt by mistake.
Basically, the referee got bumped. Valentine gets pinned by Backlund. Valentine immediately raises his hands as if he were one, and the referee hands the belt to Valentine. And like
Was this
said,
a test balloon?
What's that?
Was this a test balloon?
No, you don't do test balloons at Madison Square Garden, my friend.
Well, you don't do goofy finishes like that either, so I'm trying to figure out what the rationale would be. I mean, I'm thinking maybe kind of – where else would you do it? You do a test balloon there just to see how the Garden crowd reacts. Is it something they buy or not?
I mean, I remember seeing it on cable. I think the match was October 23rd, 1981, and I saw it. That was a Monday night. And me and my friend saw it on cable on the Saturday night, and we're all just kind of looking at each other like, you know, can maybe one of you explain this to me? And no, this was unexplainable.
Was he ever legit considered for the belt?
I can't help but think that he was. I cannot help but think that if they ever went down a road where they did a superstar Billy Graham type transitional champion, that he would have been absolutely in the top three, if not number one, for that spot.
He is the president of the fan club, the president of the club that old line about what guys would improve their overall standing if they were a world champion. Him.
Oh yeah.
Because I think he's a Hall of Famer. I don't even have to think about it. He was up toward the main event everywhere he was. When I was a kid, I hated his guts because I loved – I think I loved Tito Santana just because he was always fighting him, just because I hated him that much because he just had that effect on people. But I mean, I think he – there's no reason he shouldn't have been a champion somewhere. I mean, he just must be the victim of bad timing. But that would have been a perfect spot for it.
No, I agree. I think he could have been – I've said this on the show before. I think he could have been NWA, WWF, or AWA champion, no question. Any thoughts, Mike?
Yeah, he had the chops in the ring to do it for sure. He might have been a little bland on his interviews, but you know, he could have had a run for sure in one of the three.
I mean, as someone who was a fan in that era, I would have had zero problem buying him as a world champion.
His promos are like, this is what you mentioned, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, about Jerry Briscoe, who that Jack Briscoe was a better babyface promo, but Jerry was the better heel promo. And Greg was a mediocre to bad face promo, but I always thought he was a very compelling heel promo just because you believe what he was talking about.
Yeah, to me, you were listening to a star speak. But obviously, we had the rematch on, I think it was November 17th, 1981, and Bob wins pretty clean. And when they did that finish, I mean, I knew I was a teenager, but I knew the deal with the wrestling business. I figured that they were going to – now I really thought Valentine – in some way, I thought Valentine was getting the belt because they had this screwy finish where Bob doesn't really win. Bob wins and doesn't get the title. It was held up in New York State. Now all Greg Valentine has to do is win by disqualification, count out, blood stop, whatever you got, and he is the WWF champion. But they didn't do that either.
Nope.
So the next thing Valentine does, and this is something I really miss about wrestling 40 years ago, he gets into an argument – Greg Valentine gets into an argument with Pedro Morales on WWF TV, and they agree to have a match, and Valentine's the Intercontinental Champion, which is a big deal back then. And in the middle of the match, they're outside the ring brawling, and Valentine suplexes Pedro Morales outside the ring. And this is all you needed to do back then to have a – to – have a wrestler get seriously injured as they claim Pedro Morales was. I really believe that, you know, sometimes less is more, and that this is a really good example.
This is also, I mean, this is where he has that connection with his father, where it just, there's something about him that you really think he's a little off. You really think he enjoys doing this. You may not believe the product, but you believe him. And he always had that kind of realism to him that when you – if you see like an injury angle, some, you know, with him you believe it because I was hysterical. I was 8 years old, but I remember when he did – when he broke Tito's leg. And it was a huge thing for – you know, and I completely bought into it, and it was more because of Greg. I mean, even then I knew. But
yeah,
he brought a level of realism back to a product that was starting to go away from it.
And the match, him and Piper had at Starrcade was just brutal.
Yeah.
That jumps ahead a few years, but
we'll definitely get to that. But something Sean brought up that, you know, Valentine, he seemed to be a little more sadistic. I mean, I've been watching wrestling at this point for like 6 years, and no one had ever like suplexed another guy outside the ring. And it was like, you know, it was almost like you crossed some line into, you know, hey, no one does, even the other bad guys don't do demented stuff like that, but no, Greg was doing it.
And that's also the reason why that is the one demerit on him about being the NWA champion, because he can't face. He's as natural born here. Him and Ken Patera were born to be heel wrestlers.
But you know what, though? And that's a good point, but the counterpoint is that Harley Race really didn't wrestle as a babyface his whole time as NWA champion. I mean, I'm sure there were exceptions, but he was presented as a heel every time I saw him. Same thing with Terry Funk. So they kind of changed the dynamic of the NWA championship since the days of Jack Briscoe. I mean, Kaniski was usually a heel too.
Right.
Well, but unfortunately, Greg was the top of main better in that time that you're talking about later on, when you had to be able to tween.
Very true. So he does the feud with Pedro Morales, and then he leaves WWF, I want to say right around the late spring 1982, and right. He goes back to his old stomping grounds of the Carolinas.
To Greg, one last point about that Pedro feud. To Greg's credit, Pedro's on fumes at this point.
In the ring, yes, but he was still very over to the audience.
Well, fair enough. He had a little Chief J thing going on, but still, for Greg to make something out of that was impressive.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it was probably next to the Morocco feud, it was Pedro's most memorable feud of that run.
So, excuse me, we go back to the Carolinas. So I can't wait for this.
And he renewed his feud with Wahoo then.
Okay, and this is 82. Now, do you remember what it was like him coming back?
Not really. I just remember he showed up and he went after Wahoo, and finally, you know, after a while, he beat him for the title, the U.S. championship.
At this point, Wahoo was the United States champion. He had won it from Sergeant Slaughter.
Right.
Okay. So once again, Greg Valentine has cemented himself as the number one heel in the Carolinas, except for maybe Ric Flair. Now, this is something, Mike, I'm hoping you can help me with. Ric Flair seemed to be going back and forth I don't want to say all the time, but you know, I only know what I read in the magazines. I know in 82, Flair was a heel in the Carolinas. Then he turned back because he got into it with Sergeant Slaughter, I think, and then he turned back again at some point. Can you kind of weed this out for me?
Well, he was, when did he lose a belt back to Harley?
It was June. I think June 11th, 1983.
Okay, so you know he wrestled anybody and everybody for the title during that time. Heel, babyface. I mean, I saw him wrestle in Charlotte during when he had the belt. I saw him wrestle Ken Patera. I saw him wrestle Tommy Rich. I just saw him wrestle anybody you can think of in Charlotte. You know, babyface and heel. He was just going back and forth. It was like he's flipping and flopping back and forth. So I wouldn't say he was a total heel or a total face. He was just, a definite tweener during that until he lost the title to Harley.
Okay, so losing the title to Harley is kind of what cemented him as a babyface.
Right, right.
Okay, all right.
And I don't even remember him in Slaughter, really. Feuding at all, but that doesn't mean they didn't. I mean, Slaughter was way over as a heel as a U.S. champion.
Yeah, I have seen that. So now Slaughter is going back to the WWF. We're in 1983 now, and Valentine gets into it with his old buddy, the newly turned Roddy Piper.
Right, right.
And what was that feud like? I mean, what led up to Valentine and Piper getting into it?
Well, Piper won the U.S. title. And
as a babyface, he is now turned.
Yes, and you know, Valentine had it. So he gave him a cake, and it had a dog collar inside the cake. And so then they had their start. That's where they started the dog collar matches.
Okay. And they did an angle where they did a match where it was Roddy Piper against Greg Valentine, and Valentine used the elbow, or at least this is based on what I'm reading in the magazines, used his elbow smash to basically destroy Roddy Piper's ear. And if I read the magazines correctly, they stopped the match and awarded the title to Greg Valentine, which was kind of weird. Is that close to what actually happened?
I think Piper had hurt his ear early in his career, and it bled easy. And so Piper, like in April of 83, the middle of April, he won the title from Valentine. But then Valentine won it back like 2 weeks later in Greensboro. And after the match, that's when he hit Piper in the ear with a title, and that's where he bled buckets.
That's right. He used the like the edges of the metal on the title to work on Piper's ear. That's right. So they're feuding, and it leads up to, as you said, the big dog collar chain match at Starrcade. And I saw that match maybe a year ago, and you are right, sir. That match was brutal.
Sick, slow, brutal brawl.
For sure.
Oh, it was, I mean, it's, you see, this is, you don't need people falling off ladders, okay? Just go look at this. This is as brutal as anything you'll ever see, and his dad was the same way.
That whole card was something else.
It really was. I rewatched the original Starrcade Bell to Bell not long ago. And here's something I watched fairly recently. It was the Bob Backlund versus Bobby Duncan title match from December 1979. It was a rematch. It was a Texas death match. Anything goes. And you would have these matches in the WWF, and it wouldn't be that much different than a regular match. These guys were not trying to pull each other apart. These guys were not trying to end each other's career. That dog collar match, I mean, I know they didn't really hate each other, but they did a good job pretending they hated each other and wanted to take each other out.
For sure.
And there was nothing dramatic about it. You would just like, I remember at one point they were just driving like the chain loops into Greg's eyes. And then wrapping it into his mouth. And, you know, it was just like these like sustained tableaus of violence. And, you know, it was nothing, and they've probably been more injured in other matches, but it was just the way they told this story. It was brutal. It was 20 minutes that felt like about an hour.
You want to hear a little trivia about that, about the first Starrcade?
I definitely do.
When they first announced, and I can't remember exactly when it was the first announcement for it, they put an ad out or something. I don't remember if it was an ad on TV or thing on TV about it, advertising it, and it said listing a few of the matches that were going to be on it. But at the bottom of it said special appearance by Hulk Hogan, who's coming in to watch his buddy Ric Flair fight for the title. And that was on the very first card they showed for that, and then his name was just deleted off of it, never mentioned again. So I guess that's when he knew he was going in to Vince.
I did not know. Wow, that's amazing that they had an ad for Hulk Hogan. I knew he had been billed as being part of Starrcade 83, but I did not know that they were saying, oh, yeah, he was coming in as Ric Flair's buddy.
Yeah, exactly.
He was actually coming in as Lou jumping to the rescue here, as Wahoo's partner against Slater and Orton.
Okay.
So, yeah, Flair's buddy.
No, they definitely advertised that match. But, Mike, if you saw something on an ad that said that, he was coming in to see Ric Flair win the title, just wow, I'd never heard that before. That's like over 35 years of something I didn't know.
Yeah.
Well, but, I mean, it makes perfect sense, because if he's coming in to team with Wahoo, I mean, that's the whole point of that match is to get revenge on Slater and Orton for what they did to Flair.
That makes perfect sense.
Right.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, if you're going to fly in Hulk Hogan, you don't want him to just sit at ringside for the main event, have him in the match.
Right.
Was it Hogan in Japan?
He was in Japan. I'm not sure what happened as far as, when he canceled out on this show, but it certainly sounds like, he agreed to come in and then, just decided he wasn't going to do it.
Well, I mean, if that was the case, I think he missed it because of Baba, not Vince.
I still think
you know what? Probably both.
I still think Vince had something to do with it because that he tried to get Race to walk out before that match with the title.
Yep. And
I knew I was going to say the wrong one. I met Inoki. Hogan was in New Japan. As I was saying, I'm like, I'm going to pick the wrong one. So, yes, it was Inoki from New Japan.
That's no worries. Yeah, I kind of question that story as far as, would Vince McMahon go so far as to have Hart, the war hadn't even really broken out yet. Would Vince go so far as to ask Harley Race to blow off Starrcade, that would have been a major problem. And I didn't believe the story until I read it in Harley's book maybe 15, 16 years ago.
Right.
So anyway, and Lou pointed out this too, not only did they have the dog collar match at Starrcade, they went around the horn with it.
They did. They did.
And thank you again, Lou. And you know, wow, just talking about getting shredded every night, I would think.
And then Piper, all of a sudden, Valentine dropped the title to Dick Slater like in December, and then he was gone. Never to return, at least to the Mid-Atlantic.
No,
when was it known he was going?
I don't know, but he showed up. I'm trying to think of when he showed up on WWF TV. I want to say March 1984, but yeah. He was in Mid-Atlantic for a little while after that. He dropped the title to Slater in what started as a heel versus heel match, but Bob Orton Jr., who was supposedly Valentine's ally, helped Slater win the title. And Valentine had, as we had talked about, a very brief run as a babyface. I want to say it lasted 2 months in Mid-Atlantic. And, Mike, I mean, what were your impressions of that?
I don't even remember, to be honest with you.
Okay. I've seen it on tape. I did not think it was going to come out very good at all. I don't think Greg would have made it as a babyface.
Right.
It's just right. What is the point? You have a natural born heel. Stop trying to reinvent the wheel. Okay. Why would you want to? The only reason I could think of to want to make him a babyface is to put over some heels on his way out the door. That's why I was asking when they knew. Because I'm thinking they turned him babyface because it was some guys they wanted him to put over.
Probably. Makes sense. Total sense.
That makes sense. Another thing that makes sense, too, and I agree with you that, you know, usually the better the heel, the better the face, vice versa. There are a couple of guys who are exceptions. Valentine was one of them. One reason you might want to try it is because Valentine had been there since 1976. So we're looking, you know, in and out, mostly in, for a 7-year period. I think it could be argued that Greg Valentine, the heel, was getting stale.
Well, I don't think he has another act in him. I mean, really, he only seems at home when he's, you know, completely when he's completely over the top heel. I mean, that's the more heelish he is, the more comfortable he seems. I can't look at the grin on his face when he has that t-shirt on.
Yeah.
I mean, who has that look?
Yeah. Hey, Lou has helped us out again. He said that Valentine had that short baby face run teaming with Wahoo, Jimmy Valiant, and Dory Funk Jr. Greg Valentine and Dory Funk Jr. as a baby face team,
oh,
ladies
Lord.
And gentlemen. Thank you for that, Lou. So Valentine, to me, never mind money, never mind real life. If wrestling were real, Greg Valentine's character did the right thing, and he left the Mid-Atlantic area where he was stale. Back to the WWF for his third run in 5 years, and this was going to be the long run. He debuted, like I said, he came in, I want to say February, March of 84, while Valentine's back and Hogan's champion. Has the run against Hogan. It didn't feel the same to me. Both times against Backlund, I saw Valentine as a legitimate threat for the title. I did not see him in that light against Hogan. And for obvious reasons, Hogan was bigger. Hogan had just gotten the belt, but Valentine was still a big name up here.
That's not great. I mean, everyone you were going to bring in, it was like Hogan, Piper, for a little while, Orndorff, and everyone else was like the upper tier, or at least the main event guys were like Greg and, you know, Tito, or, you know, Morocco, or any other kind of guy. But Hogan just dwarfed everybody.
He did.
Outside of Piper for a little bit and Orndorff for a very little bit.
I mean, who really thought that Roddy Piper was going to beat Hogan for the title? I mean, there was such a size disparity between the two.
And there was a size disparity with Hogan and Valentine, too.
Yeah, a big time. That was Hogan and just about everybody, but Valentine wasn't a super heavyweight, and that's one reason why this time around I just didn't see him as a legit threat for the title.
Right.
And well, one of Roddy's great gifts is the fact he makes you forget his size.
Yeah, I saw Roddy and Andre wrestle in Charlotte one time, and
oh wow,
that was a big size discrepancy, and Piper made it interesting.
Piper is a guy who could make a match against Andre interesting.
Right.
When did Greg stop? Because I remember in the beginning days, up through 85, Greg was a very big deal. When did Greg start to go, on the wane?
Let's talk about before that. He has the run against Hogan, but then he wins the Intercontinental title from Tito Santana, Sean, as you were talking about.
Yeah.
And in the process, injures Tito Santana's leg, and we see Tito get stretchered out, and we see footage of Tito in the hospital about to get knee surgery at the hands of Greg Valentine.
You saw Tito, the knee surgery?
Yeah.
They had footage of the knee surgery.
Yeah, which tells me that Tito just needed it anyway. But
yeah.
Santana winning the Intercontinental title just stunned me. I was there live. They turned on all the cameras. I was still stunned. Valentine winning it seemed like the most normal, natural thing in the world. Like, to me, that was his niche in 84. What do you guys think?
Well, I love Tito, and I thought it was a great feud. There were magic in the ring. I've seen them a bunch of times. I remember that match in Boston. Well, it was a cage match. Greg, of course, made a memorable exit by wrecking the belt on the way.
Yeah, that was
the
actually
door.
In Baltimore.
Oh, was that in Baltimore?
Nah, okay. No big deal, but yeah.
Yeah, but I remember the wrecking the belt. But I mean, I remember the match in Boston, and it was they always had great matches. It was I had no problem with it at all because Tito was remember Tito at the end. Tito in the mid 80s was a big deal.
Yeah, he was.
How was Valentine and JYD?
Yeah, that was at WrestleMania. Valentine, I wanted to, I'd like to say, wow, he had a really memorable run as Intercontinental Champion. But in a way, and don't get me wrong, I liked the Valentine versus Tito Santana matches. I have grown to appreciate them more as time has gone on, but it's all they did with him. It was like Tito versus Valentine and Valentine versus JYD at WrestleMania.
Hogan, that was the whole problem. Hogan dwarfed everybody. Everybody that wasn't Hogan or for a very kind of brief stretch like the Rotundo and Wyndham. I mean, if you weren't Hogan, it was you weren't hooked up with him, then everyone else was a significant step below. It almost looked minor league.
That's true. I mean, it was hard to find for them to find opponents that were believable against Hogan. I mean, he was, what can I say? He was Hulk Hogan. So,
how many opponents did they bring in? How many home opponents for Hogan were homegrown, and how many did they have to bring in from outside?
I can't think of any that were homegrown.
Yeah, they were all from outside.
Yeah, that tells you something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, wrestling was changing too, but Valentine eventually loses the title, as we mentioned, back to Tito Santana, which really surprised me that they put it back on Tito. Nothing against him, it's just he already had it. And then Valentine starts teaming with Brutus Beefcake on TV. Now, this is back in the day where two heels or two baby faces would sometimes just randomly team up. And it wasn't going anywhere. It was almost like a shortcut to get both guys on TV in one match. And I was stunned when this team came out and beat Barry Windham and Mike Rotundo for the tag team titles. But once again, it's like, wow, Greg Valentine's getting a renewed push.
I hated everything about this. This is what I was trying to get to before. It was because it was at this point that Greg seemed less of a big deal. Because they used Greg's prestige to bring over Beefcake to make him look more legitimate. They gave them the belts over the U.S. Express, which they never should have done anyway. It just – I hated everything about that title switch. It was at that moment I knew Greg was starting to go down the card.
But you know what? At least they kept him in a prominent position. I mean, let's face it, it's the WWF tag team titles, but you're right. It's not main eventing MSG against Hogan or Backlund. It's not being the Intercontinental title champion. Oh.
Beefcake and his clown show, it killed Greg. Greg was the ultimate sadistic badass. And he's sitting,
I think, too, like, I remember they lost the titles to the British Bulldogs at WrestleMania 2, which was, I want to say, April 2nd, 1986. I'm probably off on that date.
Seventh,
thank you. Okay. And it was that moment, like, he stayed in the tag team with Beefcake. And it really felt like Valentine, after 10 years, was finally like falling way down from the top of the card.
Yeah, he was just going through the motions, it seemed like.
Very much so. So I just looked at the time. We are almost out of time, but I wanted to share one last observation or story about Greg Valentine. I told you the one where he was allegedly supposed to win the title in 81, which I kind of don't believe anymore. This one I know is true. Valentine's contract was coming up at the end of 1987 or early 1988, and he got in touch with Jim Crockett to come back. And either Ric Flair, Jim Crockett, or both wanted to make him the fourth horseman after Lex Luger left. Any thoughts on that? I'll start with you, Mike.
No, I had not heard that.
So, I think it'd be great.
I had heard it at the time, which means that, I'm pretty confident that this was a real thing.
I think it's a great idea.
Any thoughts, Mike, before I...
I wonder why it never happened.
Well, it didn't happen because... Greg Valentine, he decided he was going to, Vince McMahon made him an offer, and that offer included a renewed push. He was going to be a singles wrestler again. He was going to be managed by Jimmy Hart instead of Johnny Valentine. Yuck. And they did the thing where they gave him the shin guard, which made the figure four leg lock relevant again. And right. They feuded him with Beefcake. I wasn't a big fan of Beefcake, but he was over as a babyface. That feud did okay. And then after that, Greg Valentine was just another guy.
Point of just a quick correction. Johnny Valiant was his manager to start off with.
Yeah, you're right. He got away from Valiant. They switched him to Jimmy Hart, which was,
You said Johnny Valentine.
Oh, I'm sorry. My apologies. Johnny Valentine was not his manager. He was.
I figure I had to mention this because on Saturday I'd be getting the email. Oh, my God. What happened?
My apologies to everyone. My own opinion as we wrap this up is it would have been a titanic mistake for the NWA to bring back Greg Valentine. At this point, he in 1987, he had been around the mid-card of the WWF. He was getting older. He just wasn't what he once was. And it's funny. I know that a lot of wrestlers back then – they're on the road. They're doing what they need to do. They're not paying attention to what's going on in the WWF, but someone needed to, because to me, you don't bring in a now mid-card WWF guy who has been, if he's stale in the WWF, he's stale everywhere because WWF is on everywhere. And I think it would have been catastrophic. And I think they were way better off going with Barry Windham. But anyway,
my counter to that would be that I think it may have renewed Greg, because Greg was clearly going through the emotions. I think he physically could still go. He just was looking at what he was doing in the WWF saying, who cares? Now he goes into a more prominent role. I think he would have come out a little more renewed.
He might have. I don't think it would have been enough. I don't think the fans saw him as a star anymore, because he was presented as not such in the WWF for such a long time. Such a long time, meaning about a year and a half, but that's forever in wrestling.
Yeah, yeah. Barry Windham was a much better choice.
But yeah, overall, how can you argue about Windham? He really was the perfect choice there. But I still think it would have been interesting.
Hey, we're all about opinions here. My opinion would have been that it would have been a catastrophe. But anyway, Mike, thank you for coming on. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
It was good talking to you again.
You too, John.
All right. And Sean, thank you again for your contribution. I want to thank our super producer, Luke Hippelman, for all of his contributions. And I want to thank everyone for listening. We will see you next week. And this podcast is a production of the Arcadian Podcast, Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network. See you all next week.